above very pretty knees. He'd always favored pretty knees on a woman, though he couldn't say just why. It had taken him a while to register the color over what was inside the dress, but he liked the happy blue with those little swirls of pink and green over it, and the way she'd paired it with boots that picked up the tone of the green swirls. She'd left her hair down, long and straight over her shoulders. He didn't mind they'd gotten there first, could clink beers together before the others piled in. Not when he could take the time for some lazy flirting.
"I don't think I've seen you in a dress since you were about 14. A wedding, it seems to me. One of your cousins."
"It must have been Corey's if you have my age right. And you probably do. After that, Mom couldn't veto my wardrobe choices."
"You filled this one out better than you did that one."
"Puberty took its time with me, but it got there." "You filled out well yourself." He wore jeans and a chambray shirt that edged his eyes toward blue. He didn't smell of horses tonight, but of the forest, which was almost as good. "I want to say, before Rory and the rest of them get here, I appreciate you not being annoyed, at least not that it shows, that they will be here. It just sort of happened."
"I'm not annoyed. I like everybody who's coming. I don't know Chelsea very well, but she seems fine."
"Rory's got his eye on her, and she's got hers right back on him."
"I don't know her well, but I've had a look at her. It doesn't surprise me Rory'd have an eye."
"As I believe Jessica and Chase are circling around having an eye on each other, this could be considered a kind of triple date."
"Given it's Chase, the circling could go on, oh, another 5 or 10 years.
"I think Jessie'll cut that down some, if she stays interested."
"I'll wish her luck," Callan decided. "You and me, Beau, we're done circling."
"Well, hey there, Beau! Haven't seen you in weeks."
A waitress settled by the table, giving Bodine's shoulder a quick squeeze.
"Y'all having dinner? You got more coming, right? How about I leave some menus, so..."
She angled toward Callan, got a good look. Her eyes popped.
"Callan Skinner! I heard you were back, but I haven't seen a trace of you."
She leaned right down, kissed him full on the mouth.
"Welcome home."
"Thanks. It's good to be back."
His brain did a desperate search through old files for a name to go with the face.
"One of these days I want to hear all about you working in the movies. That must have been so exciting. Why, who'd have thought when we were riding around in your old truck you'd be off rubbing shoulders with movie stars? You ever meet Brad Pitt?"
"I can't say I did."
"I bet you don't know Darlie's married, do you, Callan? She's not Darlie Jenner now, but Darlie Utz," Beau chimed in.
"Just like the potato chip," Darlie said with a laugh. "Though if we had a share of that, I wouldn't be working at the Roundup." "Oh, right, Lester, for God's sake, I see you. I'm having a minute with an old friend, so just hold your water."
She turned back from berating an impatient regular, beamed at Callan.
"Married 3 years now. And we've got a little girl."
"Congratulations, Darlie. How's your brother? Is Andy still in the army?"
"He is. He made sergeant. We're really proud of him."
"You tell him thanks for his service when you talk to him next."
"You bet I will. I gotta get Lester off my back. You take your time with the menus. You want another round when I come back?"
"We'll wait for the others. Thanks, Darlie."
"And thanks for the save,"
Callan said when the waitress stalked over to Lester.
"I couldn't place her.
I took her out a couple times, but I couldn't place her."
"She's gone from coloring her hair blonde to coloring it red, and she's curling it till it springs around like a rabbit. I don't mean that in a hard way, just to say she doesn't look like she did when she was 16 or 17. Her husband's Azuli." Callan thought of the smoke jumpers who trained just down the road and fought wildfires all through the season.
"I should have thanked him for his service, too."
He tapped the menu.
"Are you hungry?"
She rested her chin on the palm of her hand, smiled dead into his eyes.
I've been working up an appetite.
You're killing me, Bodine.
Skinner, I haven't gotten started.
Oh!
She straightened, waved, before Callan could pull her in, get started himself.
It's Rory. Looks like he's got Jessica and Chelsea. Don't tell me Chase backed out.
Callan stood up as Rory guided the women to the table.
You guys good there?
Rory gestured to the beers as he pulled off his coat.
I've got drink orders. Taking it to the bar.
We're good, right?
Callan nodded at Bodine.
All good.
Give me a minute,
Rory added.
I'll go with you.
Tossing her coat aside, Chelsea went with Rory. I didn't realize this place was so big. Jessica looked around as Callan helped her with her coat. That's about the longest bar I've ever seen.
Plenty of beer, Bodine told her. Lots of local brews.
The wine? She wagged her hand in the air to signal it was only so-so.
Good thing I went with a huckleberry margarita. I've developed a taste for them. You know, we could think about working out some sort of package with this place.
Not tonight. Bodine tapped her arm. No work in the roundup.
Right. How about Chase?
Oh, Rory, who insisted on picking me up, said, Oh, yeah. Chase said he had a couple things to finish up, and to order him a green flash and the Saturday special burger if we got started before he made it.
What are those?
That's a local beer and a buffalo burger with bacon, pepper jack cheese, and jalapeno sauce, Bodine told her. Chase has a fondness. How are you going to dance in those shoes? Jessica glanced down at her hot red stilettos. Very gracefully.
I like 'em.
Cal gave them a leer and a wink.
How'd the wedding go?
Without a hitch.
The bride wore a lace off-the-shoulder gown with a fringed hem, white boots, and a white Stetson with a crystal hatband. The decorations were, well, obsessively Western. Silver horseshoes, wildflowers in cowboy boots and hat vases, more boots in table-favor shot glasses, bandanas for napkins, burlap table runners. The cake had fondant to replicate cowhide, and the topper, the happy couple on horseback. It actually worked.
I wouldn't mind having a boot shot glass, Callan said.
Well, I'll see if any got left behind. She glanced at the menu as she spoke. What are screaming nachos?
Melt your face off, Bodine told her. Sounds good. We ought to get some for the table.
I don't see any salads. For a second or two, Bodine just blinked. Then she threw back her head and howled.
Jesse, you come here for the red meat, the hot sauce, the beer, and the music. Rabbit might find its way onto the menu, but rabbit food won't.
She grinned as Rory and Chelsea came back with the drinks. Have a drink or two. It'll all go down easier. So saying, Bodine hailed Darley and ordered a large platter of screaming nachos. By the time Chase got there, the nachos were a memory, one Jessica feared would live in her stomach lining for years, and dinner was ordered.
Sorry. Had a couple things. You missed the nachos. And they're just as potent as I remember.
Callan lifted the beer he continued to nurse.
Dinner's coming. I'm ready for it. Place is filling up.
Most stools at the bar had already been claimed. A few tables remained open, but at others people ate, drank, and talked, so the noise pushed against the bartender's playlist. The band wouldn't take the stage for nearly an hour, but dancers already circled the dance floor. The big square of plywood held stains from countless spilled beers, and, infamously, near dead center, a faded bloodstain from a fight, over a woman, so the story went, nearly a decade before. Dancers twirled under three enormous wagon wheel lights. When the band came on, the head bartender, the captain of the ship, would dim those lights from their current high noon glare. Callan might have imagined the evening differently, but he couldn't find a single flaw sitting around a crowded table, elbow to elbow with friends,
close enough to Bodine to smell her hair every time she turned her head. He'd frequented places not dissimilar to the Roundup in his years away, drinking with friends, flirting with women with sweet-smelling hair. But he knew, without a doubt, for him, there was nothing like home. It didn't matter what they talked about, and with Rory at the table, you'd never have a conversational lag. But eventually it turned toward Callan and his Hollywood experience.
It had its moments, he said, when Chelsea, a little wide-eyed, asked if it had been exciting, glamorous. Mostly it was horses, but it had its moments.
Not too many, Bodine put in, as he never met Brad Pitt.
Never did.
Rory pointed a finger at him.
Best female meet. Movie star division.
Well, that's not even close. Charlize Theron.
Now Rory went wide-eyed.
Kiss my ass! You met Charlize Theron?
I did. A Million Ways to Die in the West. Seth MacFarlane movie. Funny guy.
Screw MacFarlane! You met Charlize Theron?
What's she like?
Did you get close enough to touch?
She's beautiful. Smart. Interesting. I might have touched her in the general course of things. Mostly we talked horses. She's good with them.
Before Rory lapses into a coma, Bodine swallowed the last of her burger, best male meet, same division.
Pretty much as easy. Sam Elliott. I'm not going to say beautiful, but smart and interesting. And I never knew an actor to sit a horse better.
I still got one good arm to hold you with.
Jessica turned toward Chase, and the iconic, gravelly voice. That sounded just like him. What's that from?
Tombstone. Virgil Earp.
He's got a million of him, Rory claimed. Do Val Kilmer, Chase. Do Doc Holliday.
Half smiling, Chase shrugged.
I'm your huckleberry, he said in a lazy southern drawl.
What does that mean? Chase looked at her.
It means, mostly, I'm your man.
He looked away again, picked up his beer. So it's a romantic idiom. Even as Rory snorted, Chase turned back to her.
I don't expect Doc had romantic feelings for Wyatt Earp. You never saw Tombstone?
No. Now Jessica's gaze circled the table and the looks of amusement or shock. Uh-oh. Am I about to be tossed out of here?
Ought to see the movie, was all Chase could say.
When the table as a whole began to grill her on what westerns she had seen or hadn't, she was treated to Chase's mimic quotes from John Wayne through to Alan Rickman. As entertaining as it was, she was relieved when the band took the stage to cheers and applause, ending the Inquisition. They busted right out with a song she didn't recognize any more than she had the quotes from Quigley Down Under.
We're up!
Rory grabbed Chelsea's hand, spun her out onto the dance floor.
Said I'd take you dancing.
Callan stood, held out a hand for Bodine's. We'll see how good you are at it. He was pretty damn good. He had a way of holding her right in, moving with her and against her in a prelude to what they both knew was coming. She laughed, twirling easily when he spun her out, then gave him a taste of her own by shifting on the way in so her back pressed to him, undulating.
You learned some new moves, he said in her ear.
She tipped her head back so their lips almost touched. I've got more. She twirled again, let him draw her in, and hooked an arm around his neck as she matched her steps to his.
You sure as hell do. What have you been up to while I've been away, Bodine?
Practicing. At the table, Jessica watched the dancers. A lot of stomping, spinning, and what she thought of as scooting. While Bodine and Callan did all of that, they coated it with a layer of sex. She'd never thought of country-western dancing as sexy. When the second number picked right up after the first, Chase cleared his throat.
I'm not much of a dancer.
She angled toward him. That would make us about even here, as I've never done this kind of dancing in my life. Why don't you teach me a little?
I can try.
Rising, he took her hand.
You're probably going to need another drink after we're done.
I'll risk it. After she reached the plywood, she turned, put a hand on his shoulder. Right?
Yeah. And...
He put an arm around her waist.
We'll just sort of... Can you walk backward in those shoes?
I can run backward in them. And... She took it on herself, raised their joined hands, executed a twirl out, then back to him. No worries.
You're already better than I am.
She smiled. They seemed to be moving around the floor just fine. I can teach you if I have to. About the time the women took to the floor to save a horse, ride a cowboy, and Jessica learned, or tried to learn, her first line dance, Jolene and Vance Lubbock headed home. They'd taken what they called their Escape from the Kids night, a once-in-a-blue-moon event. The intention had been a quiet dinner, something dimly recalled from before the advent of three kids under six, and a movie that didn't have any sort of animation or talking animals. Along the way, Jolene realized what she really wanted to do with the four precious hours they'd roped in a babysitter. She directed Vance to get on and off Interstate 90 and check into a Quality Inn. He didn't put up a fight. For the first time in more than a year, they had energetic, wide-awake, uninterrupted sex. Twice. Then a third time after Vance ran out to get food from the eatery next door. While they couldn't quite pull off a fourth, they indulged in a long, hot shower where no one called out for Mommy or Daddy. They drove home again in the dreamy afterglow, vowing to make motel sex night a regular event. We'll make more of an effort. So relaxed, she wondered she didn't slide out of the seat. Jolene smiled at the father of her children, remembering why she'd married him in the first place.
Next time, we add a bottle of wine.
Vance kissed her hand. And some sexy lingerie.
Oh, baby.
She laughed, sighed. I love our babies, Vance. I couldn't imagine life without them, but oh my God, having a few hours not being mommy first. Once a month. We can do once a month.
It's a date.
He kissed her hand again, absolutely and blindingly in love with his wife. He saw the gray lump on the side of the road, took it as roadkill, had already passed it when his brain registered what his eyes told him. Vance!
I know. Hold on.
He hit the brakes, backed up. It's a woman! I swear it's a woman!
I see her. I see.
He edged the car to the shoulder.
You stay here.
I will not! Jolene pushed out even as he hit the flashers. God, Vance, she's half frozen. Get the blanket out of the truck.
I'm calling 911.
Get the blanket first. She's got a pulse. She's alive, honey, but she's freezing out here. I can't tell if she's hurt anywhere. She's got some scrapes, some nasty scrapes, and she's hit her head, or someone hit it for her. He tossed his wife the blanket, pulled out the flares.
I'm calling for an ambulance.
Jolene tried to warm the cold hands with her own, looked at her husband in the red light of a flare. Tell them to send the police, too. A little after midnight, the Lubbocks gave their statement to the responding officer, while EMTs loaded the unconscious woman into an ambulance. Chase drove Jessica home. Rory's idea, she thought, not because he wanted to link up the two of them, but because, clearly, he'd wanted the chance to linger with Chelsea. I imagine they'll shut the place down, your brother and Chelsea.
Rory's not one for leaving a party until he's dragged out.
I appreciate you taking me home. I couldn't keep up with them.
Oh, it's no trouble.
He shot her a glance.
Seems like you had a good time.
I had a great time. I learned two line dances, danced with a man named Spunky, and ate screaming nachos.
A lot different from back east.
Worlds.
What would you do on a night out like this back home?
You mean in New York? Closing her eyes, she thought it out. I'd probably have dinner, probably Asian, with some work friends, then go to a club, probably techno, where a martini cost as much as 2 full rounds tonight. I'd dance with complete strangers, pretend I was interested in what they did for a living or their issues with their exes. Then I'd take a cab home.
What's techno?
Absolutely charmed. Just charmed down to her now aching toes. She smiled at him. Electronic music. What do you do on a night out if it's not the roundup?
Oh, I don't go out a lot. I guess. I like the movies, though.
Westerns.
Not just westerns. I just like movies. I went out to visit with Cal once a couple years back, and got to go on a set. A location sort of thing. Not a western, but this period piece about this woman trying to keep her farm going after her husband dies. 14 Acres, it was called.
I saw that movie. That was a good movie.
You like the movies?
He asked as he pulled up in front of her building in the village. Despite the dearth of westerns on my list, I love movies.
You ought to see Tombstone.
I'll do that. He charmed her again by getting out, rounding to her side of his truck, opening the door for her. She considered telling him he didn't have to walk her to her door, but she wanted him to. They'd spent the evening dancing, talking, and, unless she read him wrong, flirting. She might have been a woman with a hard and fast rule about cabbing home from a club night alone, but the roundup was no club, and Chase Longbow was no stranger.
Have you settled into your place here?
Chase, I've been here for over 6 months. I've been settled in. She unlocked the door. Turned back to him. Decided. Why don't you come in and see for yourself?
Oh, I don't want to bother you.
She rose on those aching toes, brushed her lips over his. Sometimes a woman has to take charge, she thought. And grabbing the front of his shirt, she yanked him forward. It only took him about 10 seconds to stop being shy. On the drive home, Bodine stretched her arms, rolled her shoulders. You had a fine idea, Skinner. Dinner and dancing was just right.
I've got other ideas.
I bet they're fine, too. I need you to turn up here into the resort.
That's the long way around.
Depends on where you're going. He knew where he wanted to go. Onto those nice, fresh sheets with her under him. But he made the turn. There's something so pretty about the dark and the quiet. Take the left road here. I don't know how people sleep in the city with all that light and noise.
It has its moments.
Curious, she glanced toward him. Would you ever go back to it?
I hate saying never, but there's no pull for me. I guess I missed the dark and the quiet.
We got plenty of it. Slow down. Make this next left right there.
That's not a road, Bo.
No, it's not a road. But it's a cabin. And look here. She drew out a key, held it up. What I just happened to have. He looked at the key. Looked at her.
You are a smart and interesting woman.
I couldn't agree more. He might have come around to get her door, but she didn't give him the chance. So he took her hand as they walked across the gravel and up the steps to the porch. I was smart enough to get some food and beverages in case we want some, and coffee for the morning if we stay a while.
More interesting by the minute.
She unlocked the door, turned on the light in the living area. Why don't I give you a tour?
She tossed the key aside, then her coat. We can start with the bedroom. He walked with her. We here at Bodine Resort offer rustic luxury. Hot tub on the back deck, big soaking tub, rain shower with jets, premium linens. Those linens spread over a bed already turned down for the night, one framed in thick posts and facing a window he imagined offered beautiful views in the daylight. He was more interested in the view right in front of him. Full kitchen, which we'll happily stock upon guest request, wood-burning fireplace, flat-screen TVs, and, well, whatever we can do to make the guest's stay memorable. Why don't we see if we can make your stay memorable? You can start by getting me out of this dress.
It's a nice dress. I've been thinking about getting you out of it all night.
Nothing stopping you. He stepped to her, took her face in his hands, laid his lips on hers. Soft at first, then a little deeper when her hands gripped his hips. As he'd done on the dance floor, he twirled her around, made her laugh. Pressing his lips to her shoulder, he drew down the zipper at the back of the dress. A long, smooth back, bisected by a thin line of midnight blue. She towed off her boots as the dress slid down. Long again, and lean, subtle curves, more midnight blue riding low over narrow hips.
Well, look at you.
Is looking all you want?
Not nearly. But it'll do for a minute.
He traced a fingertip over the top of her breasts, felt her shiver.
Yeah. You sure got prettier.
I ought to get to look some myself. She unbuttoned his shirt, ran her fingertip over the line of exposed flesh. You keep in shape?
I do what I can.
To see for herself, she shoved the shirt aside.
Well.
She used her palms now, pressing them to a hard chest, a tight stomach.
Look at you.
Used to be you could count your ribs at a quarter-mile distance. She looked up at him from under her lashes, that sly smile, and unbuckled his belt.
Odine.
As she flipped open the button of his jeans, he yanked her to him, crushed his mouth to hers, felt his body all but implode when she chained her arms around his neck, her legs around his waist. He fell onto the bed with her. Hot body and cool sheets under him, her hands digging into his back, then dragging at his jeans. He kicked off his boots, sent them tumbling to the floor with a thud, helped her strip off his jeans. She lifted her hips, pressed against him until the need all but blinded him. He struggled to catch his breath, his control.
It's been a long night of foreplay.
Impatient hands yanked at his boxers. Main event, Skinner. Now. Oh, God, right now. His hands weren't altogether steady as he stripped her panties away, flipped the hook of her bra so he could taste those lovely, lovely breasts. He wanted to know she ached as he did. Just another minute to make her ache. Then he was inside her, and he swore the world quaked. She cried out, not in shock, but with a kind of triumph. Her hands vised at his hips, digging in, urging speed as hers pumped under him. He had to clamp her hands over his head, press down, or it would have been over before it really began.
Just a minute, he managed. Just a minute.
If you stop, I'll have to kill you.
Not stopping. Couldn't. Jesus, Bodine.
His mouth ran over her throat, her breasts.
Where's this been?
I can't. She felt it build, beyond her control, that rising storm of deep, dark pleasure, that instant where she clung. I can't. It ripped through her. Gorgeous, glorious, the rush of heat, the pound of pulse, and the slow, staggering fall. God! God! Can't breathe!
You're breathing,
he whispered, taking them both up again. He gave her that speed now, the power with it. Dazed, nearly delirious, she heard the rhythmic slap of his flesh against hers, saw his eyes were like tornado clouds, deep, deep gray with green undertones. He was the storm inside her. When it broke, broke for both of them, she let it sweep her away. Chapter 16. They never opened the wine or cracked a beer. By the time exhaustion trumped lust, Bodine fell asleep, sprawled on top of him with his hand still tangled in her hair. Still, Bodine's body clock woke her before dawn. Clock aside, her body felt loose, warm, and thoroughly used. They'd shifted in the few hours of night they hadn't been active, and Bodine, who'd never considered herself much of a snuggler, realized she'd snuggled right up against Callan. As his arm lay over her waist and one of his legs hooked over hers, she didn't imagine he minded. She closed her eyes and, cozy as a kitten, hoped sleep would slip her away for another hour. But she could feel his heartbeat, slow and steady. She could smell his skin. And she could remember exactly how his hands, rough, hard, and skilled, learned and fulfilled every secret she owned. Sleep wasn't happening. And since she wasn't entirely sure she could handle another round of sex, she eased away and rose to start her day. Callan dreamed of her, of lying naked with her in a field of meadow grass. Starry little white flowers scattered through her hair. They moved together slowly, as need, greed, impatience hadn't allowed through the night. But in the meadow, sweet overcame urgency. He could watch her face. The way those green eyes deepened as they held on his, the way her breath sighed out, the way her hand lifted to lay against his cheek. Rain fell, so the grass shined with it, as green as her eyes. Wet grass, wet hair, wet woman. He woke, reaching for her. Baffled, he lay where he was, assessing the tone of light that told him sunrise was still a ways off. And the rain in the dream? The sound of the shower in the adjoining bathroom? The dream, the tenor of it, amazed him, and embarrassed him even more. Erotic was one thing, but meadows and flowers and rain showers? That was downright romantic. He'd just nudge that over in a corner, for now. He heard the shower shut off, and before long, the door opening.
It's Sunday, he said.
Oh, you're awake.
Yeah, Sunday all day.
He heard her milling around the room, saw the shadow of her in the dark.
Why are you out of bed?
I've got this alarm in me. Sometimes I can shut it back off again, sometimes I can't. I gotta have coffee.
Go ahead and go back to sleep a while. I know you're working today, but you've got a couple hours. I'm just going to borrow your shirt here until I get some coffee in me. When she walked out, he stared up at the ceiling. How was a man supposed to sleep after some romantic dream, even if it sat in a corner? Especially when a woman stepped out of a shower making the air smell of honey, when he imagined her wearing nothing but his shirt. The weaker sex, his ass. Women had all the damn power just being women. He got up, walked naked into the bathroom to grab a shower of his own, and found a boxed toothbrush and a travel-sized tube of toothpaste on the counter. She didn't miss a trick. By the time he came out, coffee scented the air. She'd lit a fire and stood by the big front window drinking her coffee, wearing nothing but his shirt. The elk are calling, she said, coming down to graze. Sunrise is close. We'll see it from here, and it's a hell of a show. She turned back,
long legs bare, his shirt hanging on her, just a couple of the middle buttons fastened. Her hair hung wet, sleek, dark as midnight. All the power, he thought again.
We've got some Greek yogurt and granola, if you want some.
Why would anybody?
I know.
Laughing, she walked back to the open kitchen, opened the fridge. I tell myself I'll learn to like it, but I'm losing faith in that. I got some chips there. Picked them up in case we got hungry last night.
He glanced at them, thought, what the hell, and opened the bag.
He just needed a few minutes for his system to settle again. Leaning back on the counter, he watched her mix a blob of yogurt with a scoop of granola.
I just need to change up the sheets and towels, give the bathroom a cleaning, wash up the dishes.
I'll give you a hand with that.
It won't take long. I can ride into the BAC with you, then walk to the office. I'm not getting in my workout otherwise.
She ate a spoonful, winced. It never gets any better. Callan held out the bag of chips. She struggled. Lost.
Just this once. She reached into the bag. Why is everything that tastes so good bad for you?
She frowned at the yogurt.
Maybe if I crumbled up chips in it.
Callan took the bowl from her, set it aside.
I've got something to say.
Her eyes went from amused to wary.
All right.
I don't know where this is heading, where we're heading. But as long as we're on the road. Are we still on the road?
We're standing here after rolling around naked half the night, having coffee and barbecue potato chips. It looks like the road to me.
Okay, then. As long as we are, it's just us. We don't have any other traveling companions.
Studying his face, she ate another chip.
I'm taking that to mean neither of us sleeps with anyone else.
That's the meaning.
Still studying him, she drank some coffee.
I think you're probably aware at this point that I like sex just fine.
Yeah, I got that. You're good at it, too.
I like to think so.
Enjoying the casual sin of it, she crunched into another chip. But liking sex doesn't mean I play fast and loose.
I never thought you did. And I'm not just talking about you. There are two of us here.
She pursed her lips. Nodded.
All right.
So, a reasonable bargain. No hitchhikers, for either of us. After setting her mug down, she dusted the salt off her fingers. Do you want a spit oath? It was that damn sly smile again.
Nope.
He tossed aside the bag of chips, shoved her back against the refrigerator.
I've got something else in mind.
He took her, then and there, more fiercely than he'd intended, while the rising sun burned red against the windows. While Bodine didn't absolutely have to go into the office, she'd already scheduled it into her Sunday. Just an hour or 90 minutes to clear up some paperwork. She considered pulling out her gym bag, always packed, and taking another hour in the fitness center. But she figured she'd had plenty of exercise during the last 24 hours, enough that she hadn't balked when Callan insisted on dropping her off right at the door rather than letting her walk from the BAC. She left him the tote of wine, beer, and coffee, told him to keep it on hand, then surprised herself, and him, by leaning over and giving him a memorable see-you-later kiss. To her mind, if you slept with a man and intended to keep right on doing it, you shouldn't be ashamed if people knew it. She strolled into her office, humming a little, and decided to continue the screw-it state of mind that had started the day with potato chips. She grabbed a Coke rather than the water she'd been trying to drink more of. She'd barely settled at her desk when Jessica clipped by, backtracked. I didn't know you were coming in today. Just for an hour or so. Bodine told her.
You're on the post-wedding brunch. I gave Chelsea lead, but I'm standing by. So far, so good. The theme continues with Western omelets, breakfast burritos, biscuits and gravy, huckleberry mimosas, and so on. Brows lifted. Jessica angled her head. You must really like the dress. I do. And I consider it a sign that I'm doing the walk of I'm not a bit shamed. Good. He's pretty terrific. I really enjoyed having the time to get to know him, and everyone, better. God. She stepped in, shut the door, leaned back on it. I slept with your brother. Rory or Chase? Joking, Bodine said with a laugh as Jessica's mouth dropped open. He's also pretty terrific. I initiated it. I've known him all my life, Bodine tapped her own cheek. This is not my surprised face. You're okay with it? On a kind of phew, Jessica ran a hand over her smooth twist of hair. I know we'd talked about it in the theoretical sense, but now it's a reality. I'm relieved you're okay with it. I'm assuming you're okay with it, too. I'm exhausted, Jessica said with her own laugh. I don't want this to be weird, so I'll just say, once Chase gets off the mark, he has a lot of stamina. And that is weird to say to his sister. On the contrary, it makes me proud. I love him, Jesse. There's nothing weird about knowing he's interested in someone I like and respect, and she's interested right back. You make friends easily. A touch of wistfulness ghosted around the smile. I've seen it. You make them and you keep them. I've made acquaintances easily, and they come and go. I want to tell you how much I value you as a friend. Now, I'm going to let you get to work. Go hover around Chelsea for an hour or so. Then I'm going home. I need a nap. Do a friend a favor? Of course. Come back so you can drive me home before you take a nap? You got it. Alone, Bodine took another moment to consider something else interesting. If Jessica wasn't halfway in love with Chase, she was one step away. Sweet, she said aloud, then turned to her computer. Sheriff Tate stood outside the hospital room where he'd assigned one of his female deputies. He'd checked first thing that morning with the nurse on duty and knew that Jane Doe had been sedated because when she'd finally come to, she'd been hysterical, nearly violent. Terrified was the word the nurse had used. He'd read the report from the responding officer, the statements from the 911 callers, and now wanted a rundown from the doctor before he took a look for himself.
I wasn't on when they brought her in.
Dr. Grove, a stern-faced man with gentle hands, continued to study the chart as he spoke.
I did consult with the ER resident who examined and treated her. He did a rape kit, and we'll have that for you. She exhibited signs of forced and violent sex. She's been treated for frostbite on her feet. The air temperature wasn't cold enough for hypothermia, but her clothes were wet. Severe abrasions, the heels and palms of her hands, her knees, elbows, gravel in the cuts and scrapes. Severe contusions and lacerations on her right temple and forehead, most likely from striking the ground. She's concussed.
He looked up now, met Tate's eyes.
There's scar tissue around her left ankle, and scars on her back. Would that be ligature scars from being bound? I would give you a most likely on that. And another most likely on the scars on her back resulting from repeated beatings, a belt or a strap. Some are years old, some not.
Tate blew out a breath.
I need to talk to her. I understand that. You need to understand that when I attempted to do so this morning, she was incoherent, hysterical. We've sedated her to prevent her from injuring herself further. She didn't tell you her name? She did not. As the sedative took hold, she begged us to let her go, that she had to get back. She spoke of someone she called Sir. He'd be very angry. When's she going to be awake enough to talk? Soon. I'm going to advise you to go slowly. Whoever she is, whatever happened to her, she's suffered long-term abuse. Our staff psychiatrist will speak with her as well. Have you got a woman for that? If she's been raped and abused by a man, a woman might do better with her. We're on the same page there. All right, then. I want to take a look at her. We got her prints, and we're going to see if she's in the system somewhere. May take a couple more days, seeing it's Sunday, and the red tape's always a tangle anyway. I'd like to try to get her name, at least. I'll go in with you. I can treat her more successfully if she begins to see me as a familiar face and not a threat.
They went in together. The woman on the bed lay still, seemed to barely breathe, but the monitors beeped. The IV tube in the back of her hand led to a bag hanging on a stand. In the dim light, she looked pale as a corpse, the long, gray-streaked hair witch-wild.
Can we bring up the light some? Tate asked.
He moved closer to the bed as Dr. Grove turned the lights up.
My deputy has her as early 60s, but he's young. She's lived hard, but I'd go more like 50.
I agree.
Tate studied the bandaged head and hand wounds, the bruising on her jaw.
She didn't get that jaw from falling on the road.
No. Sorry, I neglected to say. I'd speculate she was struck. A fist.
Yeah. I've seen enough of it to say the same.
He judged his deputy had been more accurate judging the height, the weight.
She's given birth more than once, Grove told him.
A hard life, Tate thought again. A brutal one to have driven those lines so deep in her face, to have given her what he thought of as a prison pallor. And even so, he could see she'd been pretty once. Good bones, a well-shaped mouth, a delicate jaw, despite, or maybe in contrast to, the bruise. Something struck him, gave him a slow burn in the belly.
Can I?
Grove nodded when Tate held a hand over the sheet, over the right ankle. Tate lifted it, studied the thick scar tissue.
How old do you figure this is?
As I said, some of the scarring's newer, but the widest area, 10 years, at least.
So it could be older. She could have been bound longer?
Yes.
What color are her eyes? The deputy missed it. He's young, like I said.
I'm not sure myself.
Grove moved over and, with a gentle hand, lifted an eyelid.
Green.
The burn intensified.
Does she have a birthmark?
I need you to look at the back of her knee. Left knee, right in the crease. See if there's a birthmark.
Grove moved down the bed but kept his eyes on Tate.
You think you know who she is?
Check. Just check.
Grove lifted the sheet, bent to check.
A small oval birthmark in the crease behind the left knee. You know her?
I do. Jesus, God Almighty, I do. It's Alice. It's Alice Bodine.
As he spoke, she stirred, and her lashes fluttered.
Alice.
He spoke as quietly as he would to a fretful baby.
Alice. It's Bob Tate. It's Bobby. You're all right now. You're safe now.
But when her eyes opened, terror lived in them. She screamed, a high wailing, shoved her hands at him.
It's Bob Tate. Alice. Alice Bodine. It's Bobby Tate.
I'm not going to let anybody hurt you. Tate gestured Grove back. You're safe. You're home.
No! No! No!
She looked around wildly.
Not home! Sir, I have to get home!
You got banged up some, Alice.
Tate continued in that same calm, quiet tone.
You're in the hospital, so you can get fixed up.
No! I have to go home!
She wailed again while tears flooded her cheeks.
I disobeyed! I have to be punished! Sir will drive the devil out!
Who is Sir? I can try to find him for you. What's his whole name, Alice?
Sir! He's Sir! I'm Esther! I'm Esther!
He called you Esther. He named you that, but your ma and pa named you Alice. We went skinny dipping together one summer, Alice. You were the first girl I ever kissed. It's Bobby Tate, Alice.
Say your name. Say your name over and over again, soft and clear.
It's your old friend Bobby Tate.
No!
But he saw something come into her eyes. Or try to.
Don't you worry about it. You'll remember later. What I want you to know. Can you look at me, Alice?
Esther!
Look at me, honey. What I want you to know is you're safe here. Nobody's going to hurt you.
Those eyes. Those green eyes he remembered well, rolled in her head, flicked from point to point like a frightened animal's.
I have to be punished!
You have been. More than enough. You're just going to rest a while and get strong again. I bet you're hungry.
I... Sir provides. I eat what Sir provides.
The doctor here is going to tell them to bring you what you can eat. It's going to make you feel better.
I need to go back home. I don't know how to get home. I got lost under the moon, in the snow. Can you tell me how to get back to my house?
We'll talk about that. Maybe after you eat some. The doctor here, he's been taking good care of you. He's working on getting you better. He's going to talk to the nurse about bringing you some food. Are you hungry?
She started to shake her head, fiercely, but her swimming eyes stayed on his. She gnawed her bottom lip, then nodded.
I can have tea whenever I want, from the herbs.
I bet we can rustle up some herbal tea, maybe some soup. I'm going to sit here with you and help you eat. I'll sit right here. I'm just going to step over there for a minute and talk to your doctor.
I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't...
Alice.
He interrupted her with that same quiet tone. He didn't touch her, though he wanted to take her hand.
You're safe.
As he stepped back, she clasped her wounded hands together, closed her eyes, and muttered what he took as prayers.
Alice Bodine? The doctor asked. The Bodine family? Who is she to them? She's Cora Bodine's daughter, Maureen Longbow's younger sister. She's been missing for 25 years or more. I need you to keep that information right here in this room. I don't want word getting out on this.
The burn in his gut heaved up to scorch his throat.
God, my sweet God, what's been done to her? Can she eat? I'll have tea and broth sent in. We'll go slow there.
You did very well with her, Sheriff. You knew what to say, how to say it.
I've been a cop almost as long as she's been gone. You learn.
Out of his pocket, Tate pulled a bandana. Used it to wipe his face, wipe away the sweat.
I have to call her mother.
Yes, but I need to speak with her, with any family members, before I can let them see her. She's fragile, on every level. It may take time. Tate nodded, watched Alice pray, as he took out his phone. Cora primped for Sunday dinner. She dearly loved these family meals at the ranch, appreciated so much the way Maureen made certain they happened once a month, no matter what. She appreciated, too, the way her girl fussed a bit over these monthly Sundays in her own easygoing way. Nothing much rattled her Reenie. Cora could remember like it was yesterday, the Sunday dinner where Cora served a pretty summer picnic with potato salad and fresh-from-the-garden green beans and tomatoes, with Sam and Cora's own father grilling steaks and chicken. Little Chase running around with the dogs like his pants were on fire, and Bodine trying so hard to keep up on her toddling legs. How they'd sat and talked and laughed at the big picnic table right through the strawberry shortcake and huckleberry parfaits before Maureen announced, calm as you please, they'd better call the midwife because the baby was coming. That girl, Cora thought as she tried out a new rosy lipstick, downright determined to have her third baby at home, timing her contractions for more than 3 hours without telling a soul or batting an eye. And hadn't she brought Rory into the world barely 2 hours later, in the big old bed, with the whole family right there? Easygoing determination, Cora thought, approving the new lip color with a smile. That was her Maureen down to the ground. When she counted her blessings there was no cup could hold them. Maybe there were moments she missed living on the ranch. Even moments she still waked in the morning, telling herself to get going, get to work, stock needed tending. But she never regretted, not for an instant, turning the ranch over to Maureen and Sam and moving into Bodine House with her parents. Torches should be passed while they still burned bright. Her girl and her girl's man, they carried that torch in strong, steady hands. She glanced down at the pictures Bodine had fancied up and framed for her. How handsome her Rory had been. How proud he'd be of what they'd made together. Their two girls. She touched a finger to her lips, then to the face of the love of her life. Then to her first baby girl, then to her last. If she had a wish to spare, it would be for her oldest daughter to understand that her mother had enough love for her, enough pride in her, to light the world, and could still long so deeply for a lost child. Cora put the wish away, as blessings always outweighed wishes. She still needed to box up the pound cake she and her mother had made. She took a last look at herself in the mirror.
Still holding the line, Cora. It's a tougher battle, God only knows, but you're still holding the line.
Laughing at herself, she grabbed her purse, jolting a little as her phone rang at the same instant. An odd little shiver ran down her spine, had her rolling her eyes at her own reaction. She answered the phone. Miss Fancy sat on the side of the bed studying her boots. She liked their style just fine, with the red lightning bolts flashing down the sides. She'd always been one for pretty footwear. But Lord, she missed wearing a sexy pair of high heels.
Those days are over, she said with a sigh,
then repeated it when she heard Cora's footsteps.
I'm just reminding myself my days of prancing about in high heels are done and gone.
Ma,
was a time I could dance all night and into the morning in a pair of high red shoes. I had this pair, red with peep-out toes. I saved up nearly 6 months to... Mama.
The tone got through, had Miss Fancy looking up. The pale, stricken expression on her daughter's face shot an arrow into her heart.
My baby, what's wrong? What happened?
It's Alice, Cora managed, as her mother pushed to her feet. It's Alice. They found Alice.
She broke, crumbling to her knees, as her mother rushed to her. As Jessica pulled up to the ranch, Bodine turned to her. You really ought to change your mind about something.